Those of you that were not here last night, welcome. And I'd like to introduce Samia Collins to you. She is originally from Pakistan, grew up as a preacher's daughter, and now is a preacher's wife. So as she mentioned last night, that's a whole different kind of persecution. But we do appreciate her testimony, and we appreciate her perspective and the way that God has equipped her to share with us. She is the mother of two, Connor and Maylee. And as I mentioned, she's from Pakistan. She also works with Women of Pakistan through another version of Wings at the Church of Christ in Woodstock, Georgia. She's going to be sharing a little bit more about some of the specific things that is done through that program this morning and through what it means to move forward under persecution. She has more information over in the other room where we'll be having lunch, and I encourage you to just visit with her and share how you have been encouraged by her story later today. But right now, we'd like to welcome Samia.
I didn't want to mess it up. Hello, ladies. How was night? Did you have rested well? You all look so pretty and rested. So I'm back again. So I was a little late, running late, and I feel embarrassed that I was just rushing everywhere this morning. But I'm glad I'm here with you. I'm going to start by saying this. You know, if you Bible tells us in 2 Timothy that if we want to live righteous life, we're going to have to suffer. There's no way around it. You know, world doesn't bother with lukewarm, like I said last night. But if we want to be Christians and serve him, we're going to have to go through persecution. I'm sorry. I have a habit of holding here everything, you know, so I'm sorry. I'll try to do better. I want to clear one thing before I get started. You know, last night I was mentioning the persecution goes on under Muslim governments a lot of time, and it's true. But I want to make something clear. Not all Muslims want to harm Christianity. I just want to make that clear, because sometimes people see what's happening on television or what's happening on news, and they think all Muslims want to harm Christians or Hindus. And I do a lot of seminars on Islam, and this is not the my topic here, but I want to make a little bit clear to you guys, because after growing up and having a lot of Muslim friends and had great Muslim friends, you know, over the years. So I want to make sure that you understand there's three kind of Muslims. That's what my definition. Maybe everybody who live in under Muslim governments, they might have their own definition. There are three kind of Muslim. The one who want to live in peace, and they want to practice their religion in peace, and they don't want to bother other either. And those kinds are, in my book, are my friends and the best ones. I mean, I have a lot of, I have family in Pakistan and work with a lot of journalists and everybody over there in Pakistan. So I have great Muslim friends, women who are trying to get freedom from the persecution from men. And I have a great respect for them, and they're great fighter for their rights. And I work with them, and I have great relations with them. I mean, we are great friends. So I want to make that very clear that there's good Muslims who want to live in peace. Okay, there's the other kind, who want to do jihad, who want to harm Christian. And you're probably saying to me, how we can tell which one's good and which one's bad? I don't know. I don't have the formula. And even I grew up among them, I can't tell you what you can't look at somebody's forehead and say, you know, they're bad or good. In Christianity, we have good people, and we have people who twist the religion, amen, right, who want to twist the religion for their own gain, and same way. I have studied Quran. I went to Muslim schools. There's people in Islam who want to pervert Islam and who want to harm Christian, Hindus, Jews. And those are the one. And I can't tell you how to distinguish, how to tell which one is which. I mean, I don't have a formula. I don't know how many times I get this question everywhere I speak. You know, which one is bad, which one is good? there's no answer for that. You just have to, and listen. Always consider their lost soul too, okay? Don't go by their looks. A lot of time when 9/11 happened, I was here, and people will just mistreat Muslims here in this country. Well, let me go back, and then I'll get into that. I'm sorry, I'm not organized with my, it just pops into my head. Because I wouldn't tell you the third kind. Third kind are all, the third kind of Muslim, I told you the two, and the third one are also who are persecuted by other Muslims, like Taliban, like ISIS. They're as much victim of Islam as we are. So those are the ones I'm trying to reach and tell them there's freedom in Christianity. And I'm going to show you how we are reaching those women and teaching them who are raising those suicide bombers. You know, those little boys who become suicide bombers. My goal in life is, and so many people have been helping me in the United States, to help to reach those young men and tell them there's other way to go to heaven, not by harming Christians or Jews or Hindus. So that's what my goal is, and that's what I want to plead to you, that I need your help too. A lot of American congregations are helping me, the ladies' classes, but I need your help to reach, and I'm going to show you how you're going to help me. So going back to that, that lot of time, you know, who raised the children? What is American saying? Who rocked the cradle, rules the... Amen, because I am so bad with butchering American slangs and all that. So I'm glad that you know your... So my goal is to reach those young people who are in Pakistan and teach them Christianity and open their eyes. So I want to make that clear from the beginning. Not all Muslims are want to harm Christian. And some of them are running from their countries. Some of them want to refuge here or in Europe. You see how many were immigrating, right? On the news, you guys see that, how many are immigrating from Syria, from other countries where a lot of trouble is brewing. And those Muslims don't care. They even harm Muslims. You know, how many girls were raped, you know, because ISIS, you know, how they were taking advantage of young girls. And that's wanted to make clear that not all Muslims are bad. The Muslims who want to come and live in peace, those are the best for us to reach. You know, when 9/11 happened, you know, a lot of time people just give you these looks, like even I got the looks, and I'm thinking, I'm suffering as a Christian over there. Why are you giving me dirty looks, you know? So I'm saying, don't go by people's looks. You know, James said, don't show partiality because of somebody's look, right, in the book of James. So what my point is that if somebody's wearing a hijab, that is a lost soul. Just like we're trying to reach somebody else who's non-Muslim, right? They are lost souls. So look at them as lost souls. And I don't want to encourage people to hate Muslim, because a lot of times people get, when they see the persecution happening to us, that's why God put us there. He's accomplishing something through us in that part of the world, because that's a dark part of the world where there's no hope. And he put us there because he's trying to accomplish something. So that persecution, we've been under persecution for years, okay? Nothing new. Christianity been persecuted ever since it got started. Amen, right? You all are students of the Bible. I'm speaking at Christian College, so I know you're Bible students. So what I'm saying is nothing new. But I want to make sure nobody gets away after you leave this, that Muslims who are here, yes, some people do want to harm. I want to make that clear, and I can't tell you who's want to harm and who doesn't. But always look at them as lost soul. Because if we look at them as lost soul, we would reach them. And they are lost soul because Christ died for the whole world, right? He didn't just die for you and I. He died for the whole world. They need Christianity. They need the teaching of Bible. They need to know the truth. And what Bible said? Truth will set you free. So we need to reach them with Bible. And, you know, a lot of time I get asked, Samia, what's the best way to reach Muslims? I don't have a formula. The best tool works when people see that you are sincere. Amen. How many friends you have converted over the years because they saw Christ living in you? You know, I go from congregation to congregation, school to school speaking. I don't know how many times I have heard from ladies that, you know, my husband was not Christian, Samia, and today he's an elder in church. And you have no idea how much it thrills me. You, the sermon of your life is the best tool. It's the best tool. It still work. It still work. When people see Christ living in you, they will change. They will see your patience, your long suffering with them. So when I encourage you, if you're in the audience and you're trying to study with somebody, non-Muslim, or some family member, I want to encourage you, don't give up. You know, timing is different for all of us, right? Where would you be today if somebody didn't take the effort to reach you? You know, just imagine, where would you be? You know, when somebody's drowning in water, right? we will all run, right, to save them. It's our human nature. I mean, I hope everybody runs to save them because, you know, sometimes maybe, I don't know, different circumstances, I guess. But I hope everybody runs to save them. Just imagine those souls without Christ, they are drowning. Imagine that, when you look at somebody and you feel like, well, Samia, they're not worthy of it. They've gone too far. That's not for you and I to decide. That's for God to decide. Our job is not look at them and say, you know, well, she wears hijab. She looks strange. You know, she's not going to listen to me. Sometime we decide in our heart as Christian that people not interested. People are interested. Yes, it might take a little patience. It might take a little long suffering with them. You know, just try to understand people a little bit before you invite them to churches. You know, people are hesitant to come to church. We have this, you know, when I tell people I'm preacher's wife, they just shut down. You know, but if I just say my name, you know, I'm from Pakistan, and they will start talking to me. You know, so friendship tools still work. Don't go by the look. Don't show partiality because somebody wears hijab. Somebody wears, bindi on their head. Somebody looks different. You know, to you guys, when I came here in the United States, you look strange to me when I first came here. You know, I saw purple hair and girls with short clothes. I was like, what happened here? So, I thought this was a Christian country, you know. And, I mean, you know, coming from Muslim country, head to toe cover, you know. And coming to this country, you look pretty strange to me. You know, but then I got to know great Christian ladies in this country. And I said, you know what? They are people just like us who are just asking God every day to help them to get through life. You know, so media tells us over there, the Americans are so immoral. They are just, I mean, the media tells us about you like you are not even human. We are scared of you guys, the way media tells us over there. And then I lived here, and I heard media what tells you guys about us. I was like, we're not that bad people, you know. The way media portrays that we are all holding guns and just want to hurt Christians, you know, and it's not like that. People over there holding on to the hope of Christ, giving their life, you just saw that. And there's great Muslims who want to live in peace, who want to do the right thing by other people. And after living in America and got to know a lot of Christians in this country, and my view changed about you. I said, wow, they're not what media tells us, that they're moral, and they have no morals and no values, and their women are wild. That's what they tell, I don't. And their men are wild. And, you know, after living here 20 years, I was like, no, there's some decent people. I'm sorry. I'm just messing with you. You know, there's a lot of great people in this country. But I just want to make it clear that media sometimes portray us all in our eyes. But before you make a decision about somebody, what media tells you, get to know them. Give them a chance. How many times Christ give us a chance? Every time I get up off the bed, I feel like God is giving me a different chance, you know, every day. So give somebody a chance, because Jesus died for the whole world. He died for those sinners. He died for those people who look strange, and they are soul. They are soul. We have to reach them. Okay, if I start preaching, I will never shut up because I'm preacher's daughter. It's in my blood. So I am going to go with the PowerPoint. Okay, so last night I was telling you how we are reaching these young girls who are victim of rape. And in Pakistan, rape is the number one crime. You know, a lot of times, young girls, when they're raped, a lot of their families are ashamed. So these girls have no place to go. So being a product of that nation, and I know what was going to work, I was blessed with a family. Dad was a professor. Mom was a nurse. I was able to go to college. I was able to go to schools. And I'm so thankful that God was so blessed me with good family who I might not have inherited money from my family, but they instilled good values through Bible. And that's what I was making my point last night. That's why I was able to stand the test of Islam. Growing to school, young girl, from very early they teach us Quran, because Muslims believe if you teach Quran as a subject in our schools and colleges, we're going to have... Quran has the power to convert her to Islam, but I'm standing in front of you. Bible has the power to keep you stronger. Then Quran can teach you anything. I took Islam in college, Islamic studies, you know. So I have studied in depth, and I have studied this. My dad was a preacher. He made sure every day I read a chapter before I go to school or college. So I'm so thankful for that. You know, right now it might look bad when parents give you advice, but let me tell you, they're building something for you for the future. And I'm so thankful, and I'm standing in front of you, not because of the Quran. I'm standing in front of you, Christian, today. because of the Bible, because I have studied Quran in depth and it's all confusion. I want to tell you very clear. My topic is not Islam, but I'm going to throw that in there. It's a lot of confusion. Christianity has the answer. And that's why I'm standing in front of you. Because sometimes people tell you, you know, Islam has the answer. It does not. Because I study from very young age Bible and Quran side by side. Because I had to study that in school. And my dad was a preacher. He made sure we study and know our Bible every day. Because he knew we were going to be bombarded with Quran's information, education in colleges and schools. So I plead to you. We just heard from our song leader. She was just saying that persecution is coming to America, right? How many church shootings we have heard recently? So please pass your faith to your next generation. That's the best inheritance you can leave. It's more valuable than money. I'm example standing right in front of you. My dad didn't give me a lot of money. He said you had to work for it. And I'm so thankful that he did. But he did pass the faith to me. And that's what kept me grounded over the years. So I plead to you, if you cannot leave an inheritance of a lot of money to your children, to your grandchildren, or to your family, leave faith to your children. Because let me tell you, it's coming here. It's coming here, and they're going to need the foundation to stand for this. I'm going to compete with that. I'm going to get louder. They will be able to answer what they believe. So if you can't do anything for your children, pass your faith to them. Now, I'm not going to stand here and I'm not going to stand here and say it's an easy job. It's not, because the culture our kids are growing up, the culture have blurred the lines of right and wrong. They don't know what's right and wrong. But it's our job. That is the persecution you have. We might have physical persecution. That's the persecution you have, that your generations are not knowing what's right and wrong. Let's, ladies, help them to know what's right and wrong from this book, because there's no values, there's no morals without this book. Everything pertains to life and godliness. What is in it? You know, people are saying Bible is obsolete. Some people are saying that. It's not obsolete. The stories are still relevant. How many times we are in crossroad, like the rich young ruler, right? So how can they be, how can they be not relating to this culture and this time? They are. This Bible has stood the time, years and years, and centuries. It's still relevant. Okay, so I'm going to go back to the PowerPoint. This girl, so when these girls are raped, they have no place to go. So being from there, I asked them what I can do for you, because God has blessed me and placed me in a place where people want to hear me, what I can do for you. And they said, you know, if we can have sewing machines and we can sew people's clothes, we will generate income and we can able to feed ourselves. And these girls are now more than 13, 14, 15, 16 year old. I mean, they're robbed from their childhood for their future by men, cruel, cruel men. I'm not saying all men are bad, don't take that. I'm just saying the people who are doing this, they. So we provide them, we open sewing center. And when you're asking, what sewing center, do you have to buy the lot and build? No. These are operated in people's home, and it's safer that way, because then we won't become target. Because what we do in those sewing center, being a preacher's daughter, I didn't want to just give them a skill. I wanted to teach them Bible lessons. So what do? They come from 8 o'clock and they leave at 12. So what do? We do Bible study with these girls. We give them free skill. They have to pay nothing. The courses are all free. We have the ladies like who are able to sew, seamstress. They don't charge us. It's all volunteer work. The only money I raise to buy a sewing machine. Everybody's volunteer over there to teach. So we do Bible study with them for hours. And a lot of the lessons are written by people in the U.S. and I translate them, so it would be easy for them to understand. So we teach them, and that 400 baptism pictures I was showing you last night came from these sewing centers. And a lot of times these girls, you know, because they have no hope, and we teach them very simple principle. These are not PhDs, girls or anything. Some of them can't even read and write, and we also teach them how to read and write. So we make lessons, first principle of Christianity, very easy so they can understand. And I remember the first inspiration of... I'm going to talk about Inspiration Day, what we do also. First year, 2005, I went to Pakistan, and I took two missionaries with me, the ladies who wanted to work with me. And we were expecting like 100 people. Do you know how many ladies show up? 800. They're that hungry for hope to hear the message of Christ. You're probably wondering, a lot of time missionary comes from India, Pakistan, other countries, and there's tons of people show up. You know why? Because we don't have what you have. It's rare to come and hear the gospel. That's why people flock. And, you know, I only raised money for like 100 people to feed, and I was like, I don't have any money. What am I going to do now? You know, I was 20 years old back then, you know, so I was panicking. And, you know, the beautiful thing happened. People in the congregation in the village areas, now this is a impoverished area, you know, people don't have a lot. They brought their own lunches to share with people who travel for hours to get there. It was a beautiful thing. I'm going to show you the pictures of it. But it was a beautiful day that, and at the end of the day, the ladies studied with them. You know, we have a lot of lessons written and all that. And 80 ladies at the end of the day raised their hand. They wanted to be baptized that day. And it was just a beautiful day. And, you know, that was my first experience. You know, I've been preacher's daughter. I mean, I have seen God working, you know, multiplying your talent. But personally, when I saw that, I would just sit there and cry, you know, because that was my vision. I wanted to do that for those ladies. Because after living in the U.S., I saw how ladies come to Ladies' Day in the U.S. and sit down and, you know, they don't have to worry about the food. Men cook the food. I wanted to provide that for them over there because they suffer for Christ so much, you know, physically abused by people. And I wanted to provide that. So when I saw that, so for 12 years, last 12 years, we've been doing that every year. We're doing Inspiration Day. Going back to the sewing machine costs $25. So to graduate a girl, it cost me $25. And you're probably wondering, why so cheap? Because we buy it there. When I was in Pakistan, I asked the young ladies, I said, well, which kind of machine? We showed them three machines. One was computerized and one was nice, fancy one. And they were keep choosing this. It's a hand crank. It's old Singer. They were keep going back to that. And I said, why do you not want modern ones? We can afford to provide you. They said, because a lot of time they don't have electricity. Electricity is not dependable. If you've ever been on a mission trip, you know. In some part of the world, electricity is not dependable because we are overly populated and we don't have enough energy to support the population. So a lot of time, electricity is not dependable. So we showed them three models, and they will keep going back to that. And also they wanted to use that because they can take it easily from home to home, going back to the sewing center. So a lot of them are operated inside the homes. Whoever have extra room, we let them, girls gather there and do. That way I don't have to raise funds to build a building. And also in our country, buildings become threats because people think you're propaganda, something against Islam. So that way you're just going to home. And that's why we kind of fly under the radar because being product of the culture, I knew what was going to work for the ladies. You know, a lot of times us native do know something about our culture, you know, so that was going to work. So that's why we chose that, and it's successfully working. And every year I add more and more center to it. I mean, I give more and money to the families who want to open a center, and I give them money to have one. And sometimes we have 5 girls in a center, when I'm saying, and sometimes we have 15 girls. And every year I raise funds. And I want to ask you, if you're from other congregation, I do a lot of Ladies' Day. That's how I raise money. You might not be able to help me financially, but maybe I spoke a congregation and person who asked me to come, they might not be helping me financially, but there's somebody in the congregation. I have, over the years, have gotten like $4,000, somebody write a check to me, and it will cover the whole year for me. So every year, my job is to raise fund for this, so I'll be able to graduate girls. So if you like to help me, you can help me financially, that's okay. Take my cards back to your congregations. And I don't know if you like me talking, I will come to your congregation, and that's how I raise fund for this. That's one way you can help. And I can always take prayers. Because let me tell you, I'm a big believer of prayers. So if you can't help me financially, pray for this work. I have brochures like they mentioned on the table and my personal cards, how to reach me. And if ever you have a question, you want to study with Muslim person, if any way I can help you, email me. Because I get a lot of emails because I speak all over the United States and people email me. And I have helped, I mean, God have helped, I didn't. But what I can help you to reach Muslims in this nation, I would love to help. So keep my card and email me if you need any question how to reach somebody. I'm not saying I have the formula for you, but I can help you because I know a little bit about that culture. So if any way I can help you, please take those cards too. To graduate a girl, it takes me $25 just to sewing machine, but it cost me $35 to provide a Bible. Excuse me. We also give them Bible. So to graduate a girl, it cost me $35. That's how the girl would be graduated. She would take sewing machine home. She would take Bible. And hopefully with God's help, our goal is, and we study with them, and we don't force them or anything. By the time they graduate, they be baptized. We give lots of Bible over there because Bibles are not easy to have, you know. So a lot of these Bible costs $2, and we print them over there, and we get them in a native language. It wouldn't make sense to a person giving them English Bible when they can't read, right? So we give them in their native language. A lot of time I ask people, and people say, I have 5 Bible, I'll send you. I can't take Bibles or sewing machine, it won't work over there. So I have to buy these Bibles over there, and they cost $2. And we, thousands and thousands of Bibles we have given. This is my friend who went with me to Pakistan. I mean, she's in her 90s. I mean, she's the reason I'm standing in front of you. She's the organizer behind this. I have Terry, my good friend. She's not here this weekend. She was on some trip. But I have a lot of ladies in Woodstock who helps me. I'm just become the face and the fundraiser. They take care of everything. They take care of the money sending, Bible sending, everything. I mean, I have a team of ladies who make me look good. You know, after coming in the U.S., I've been teaching children's classes. I love teaching children's classes. If you're in the audience, hey, it's a beautiful thing. If you have that talent, use it, because passing your faith to next generation, teach a Bible class. Every church, from little tiny church to I went to 1,000 congregation churches, they have the same problem in the U.S. Do you know what that problem is? They can't find teachers. I want to encourage you, especially our young ladies going to Christian college, when you get back home and make your own homes, try to invest yourself teaching Bible classes. It will be rewarding. Do you know how beautiful to see those kids when they're 10-year-old, 12 years old, and still remember that Bible class story that you told them? I get hugs from kids. They're 6, 7 years old and run to me, Miss Amia, I remember when you told me this. I usually show them pictures of Pakistani kids, you know, how they are and how blessed they are here in this nation. So if you're in the audience and you have a talent that you connect with children, that's one way to pass your faith to your next generation. Do you know they will not forget their kindergarten teacher and their Bible teacher? You know how many preachers will say, you know, my Bible teacher was the reason I'm preacher today. So mission work is not running to India, Pakistan. It is some ways, but mission work also is using your talent where you are. And that's what I want to encourage you. That's what I want to encourage you. Don't, God have given you those gifts for a purpose, to invest in other people. So if you have a gift that you're a good song leader, I'm so proud that she's using her talent. What a beautiful singing, by the way. If God have given you talent, you connect with people. You know, you have personality that everybody's drawn to you. Use that personality to reach people. Friendship tool still works. Use that charm you have for the Lord. Okay, growing up, we didn't ever had a Bible class. You know, after coming in the U.S. and sitting those Bible class teaching them, I wanted to do something for those children in my country. You know how beautiful that is, that kids can name Bible books? We don't have that. So I wanted to do that. So I started, I had a friend, she was a recent graduate of college, and she wanted to go with me to Pakistan. She wanted to work with children. She was a journalist, and she still works with me. She says, Samia, I want to, listen to this. This is a Muslim country. First of all, missionaries not allowed to go to Pakistan. If you put on your visa application that I want to go to Pakistan as a missionary, you're not allowed. I took them because I said they're my family friend. And in Christ, we all are family friend, right? So we put on that they're my friend. So they went with me. She wanted to work with children. Do you know that poor girl? I think she was in the process of graduating. The whole summer she spent to make flip chart, Bible flip chart. I mean, what a beautiful thing. You know, she was a single girl, and she helped me, and she went to Pakistan, and she trained the teachers whole week. And now we have Bible school, Sunday school for those children, and it's going to go on for years and years and years because of one person took the time to help me with that. So you seeing, what are the pictures, Mia? Because I have turned back, and I apologize for turning back. This is my friend Shirley over there. She was there. And these are some of the children who came to Bible class. You know, we were prepared only for like few people, 200. 200 kids came. And they were just didn't want to leave. And do you know, they didn't have nice cushioned seats or anything to sit. It was floor, hard concrete floor they sit. And they loved every Bible story we taught them. And after the Bible stories, we also provide food for them. So they're just enjoying that day. I want to share her story with you. I don't know if my pointer works. Oh, there you go. Can everybody see this lady's picture? Good. I have to turn back to see the picture, so I apologize for that. I'm going to tell you the story of this lady. It will open you a little bit eye to the persecution, what happened to Christian. This lady, her husband was a Muslim clerk. And my dad and her husband became friends. It's very unusual for Pakistani preacher and a Muslim clerk to become friends. But I don't know, God had his own plan. God always have his own plan. So he and my dad became a friend. So the whole time he's trying to convert my dad, and my dad's trying to convert him. So, you know, it's very natural for two religious leaders always saying, I'm right and you're right, you know. But I don't know, my dad never give up on him, you know. My dad said, I'm gonna change his mind. And he was a good man, because you know what? In Pakistan, if you try to study with a Muslim, you can get automatically in trouble. But he was a good man, and he did not. He said, I want to hear your point of view. I want to know what Christianity is. So my dad studied with him. And I don't know, my dad always say, I don't know what I have said, or it was God what was working. The man decided to become Christian. But I want to tell you a story, how these people under persecution still standing for the hope that's in Christ. So after he became Christian, my dad baptized him. His family disowned him because he was a religious leader. Because in Pakistan, if religious leader trying to convert, it becomes a bad example, right? So his family became his biggest enemies. Now the man had a land, house, he had four children, that's his wife. But he had to leave all that behind. And he became homeless and jobless. And he had four kids to feed. So my dad said, my dad cried over it, but Mission Churches of Christ in the U.S. helped my dad. We have a house, we have an orphan home, we have a Bible school, we have a place for people to come and stay. So my dad said, you know what, I feel kind of responsible for all this, you know. So he said, I need to bring him in. My dad said, whatever we have, we will share with you. Just come and stay, because his family became his biggest enemy. They wanted to kill him. So we said, okay, you come stay with us. So he lived with us for years, and I remember I grew up with his children. She was like aunt to us. My mom and her become best friend, and she still lives with us. One day, he wouldn't leave the compound. We don't call our homes, we call compounds, because our homes are not like you have a nice yard, right? We don't have that. In Islamic countries, we have wall all around our houses, big, big, high walls, because people are afraid somebody throw a bomb inside of your house and you get hurt. So we have big, tall walls around everything. I will show you the pictures. He would usually not leave the compound because he was so afraid for his life. One day, he just went to get a haircut or something, and we find his body on the side of the ditch. That man stood for his faith. He wanted to be Christian. That's kind of persecution happened by bad people to good Christians. But the beautiful story comes out after that was we cry, we mourn, we still mourn because we know this family. Every time I talk, I can't talk after that because I know that family. But the beautiful story, you know, his wife had the choice to go back, right? She could have gone back and said, you know, I deny Christ and I'm going back to my family. I will have my house back, my land back, and they would have taken her with arms open. But she didn't. You know what she told my dad? I want to honor my husband. She was baptized, and her children was baptized too later on. She said, I want to honor my husband and his decision, and I want to stay here with Christians. We were strangers. She didn't know us, but she made the decision to stay as Christian, and today she is Christian. And do you know, the first graduating class from a preaching school was her son. He decided to become a preacher. People like that, stories like that, they're not giving up the hope, even after losing their lives. And you know, God has placed you here for a purpose. This life is temporary. And let me tell you, I know I'm guilty. It's so easy to love this life, don't it? I mean, do you know how easy it is? How we get caught up? And I'm guilty as anybody else. I'm not pointing finger. All those shiny things, you know, all those material things, and I'm as guilty as anybody. We get so wrapped up in it. It's temporary. Nobody was ever able to take anything with them. We're not going to take anything with them. It's all going to be here. The work we do, work hard. Somebody might even go through really quick what you steal and lie and cheat and gain, right? Your next generation might go through really fast, you know? But when we build treasures up there, those are going to be counted. You know, currency, what works up there? I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty and you give me drink. I was hungry. I was naked. I was in prison. That's the currency work up there. You know, I hate to say that, but in the United States sometimes it's so easy to write a check, right, to a mission work or to a church. But honestly, he wants your heart. He really wants your heart more than your money. You know, in my country, in my part of the world, money is hard for people to give because they don't have. After living 20 years in two stream cultures, opposite of each other, sometimes it's easy for people to write a check. And listen, a lot of mission works are running because of those checks, and I'm thankful for generosity. But he really wants your heart. He doesn't want 10% of your heart. He doesn't. I know I'm meddling now, right? He really wants 100% of your heart. That's what he wants. He wants 100% of your heart. And I'm not going to stand here and say, you know what? Hey, we all are willing to give 100% because I'm as guilty. I want to give maybe 50. I want to keep the other 50 for me. We all are guilty of that, right? But when you really think, he wants whole. He wants whole 100%. And I'm not going to tell you that I got me wrapped around my finger and I'm 100%, you know, giving him. I'm not. It's an everyday battle. It's an every single day battle. And if you don't have a battle, that's mean maybe you already lost it. You know, maybe you've given up, given to the other side. As a Christian, we should have everyday battle. What he says in the Bible, pick up your cross daily. He didn't say, one day you just pick it up, Samia, the other day just leave it home. He told me and he told you, pick it up daily, your cross. And deny yourself if you want to come after me, right? If you want to follow me and deny yourself. It's not easy to deny. I'm going to tell you from personal examples. It's not easy. It takes a lifetime. I have met 90-year-old preachers who are good, good, good men. And they will tell you, I have still not given 100%. Because we are human, right? It's the constant battle we have with ourselves. And I have that battle every day. So I hope every single day, you know, like a rock, when you hit a rock, you chip every day a little something, right? I hope you are chipping some away for him every day. And it's not easy. It's not easy. And I'm not going to say that, you know, at age of 20 or 15, you know, already chipped it away. It's going to take a lifetime to chip slowly, slowly, slowly to become his. Because when we let go of me, what it becomes? It becomes about him. But letting go of me, ladies, I have no formula to tell you how to let go of me. The one formula is to let go of the selfishness slowly, slowly, every day. It's hard. It's hard. Because world teaches us what? It's all about you. And I hate to say that this society is more about that. It's all about you. You are the best of the best. From very little we teach our kids. You are such a special angel, and they are special angels. But sometimes we put the wrong impression in their heads, you know. And then we'll teach them you're not so special, you know. So what I'm saying is every day we have to work on it, you know, on ourselves. Going back to this lady's story, her son was the first graduate of Bible school. So I want to share with you that God will use you, and he will hold your hand. If you take his side, you know, if you have tried everything in this world, try Jesus. Try Jesus. You know, it would be different. You will have a peace if you have tried everything. You know, I was somewhere speaking, and they, in the U.S., it was somewhere near Nashville I was speaking. It just hurt me to say that. They brought an alcohol addiction group to come hear me, and a drug addiction group on the front seats. And do you know some of those young ladies were not more than 30? I looked at that group, and they were under 30. And it just break my heart. You know how people are trying drugs, young people are trying drugs, other things. And it broke my heart because when they introduced me, this is the group of we want you to talk to them. And they were all alcohol addictions and drug addiction. And these girls couldn't be more than, nobody looked to me more older than 30. And it just broke my heart. That's what our kids are trying to get. I don't know what they get out of it, but the real hope is in Christ, kids. Real hope is in Christ. If you have tried everything, loving the money, your self-pride, oh, I'm just so much better than everybody else. I'm just not like these people. They are not Christian, or I'm so righteous. What does Bible say? Our self-righteousness is what? Filthy? Rags. We say ourselves, you know, I am just so righteous than this sister. I mean, I've been preacher's wife for years. Well, they really needed to hear that sermon. I'm like, oh, come on. You know, we all need to hear that sermon. You know, sometimes we have made it up in our head, I'm so much better. We are self-righteous as filthy rags. That's what Bible says. So every day, if you can work a little bit on you instead of changing the whole world and going to Pakistan and teach them about Christianity or going to India, yes, we need that. We need missionaries, but it starts at here. It starts with us. Before we change anybody, we have to change ourselves. Oh, this is the Inspiration Day pictures, and I want to share with you. You're probably saying, Samia, why are they covering their head? It's not that it's anything biblically. It's because our culture, and when you're so used to covering your head and yourself all day long, it's just hard to take it off in church. So it's nothing to do with any tradition or anything. It's because we cover every day. That's what I was going to share with you. 118 degree that day. First Inspiration Day, you're probably saying, what is Inspiration Day? Inspiration Day is a whole week. You're saying, oh no, Ladies' Day, whole week, we have to hear sermons. In our countries, it's not the same audience. Every day, some different congregation will send their ladies to hear. So the audience and the speaker change, but we have Inspiration Day for a whole week. It's kind of like a Ladies' Day. So they will, one day they will come and they'll hear the gospel. And I also raise fund for that. To do the Inspiration Day, it costs me money every year to do that. But for so far, God have helped me, and we have every year Inspiration Day, where these ladies come and hear the gospel. And also, if they have questions about the Bible, we answer that. Oh, I'm running out of time. I gotta speed up 5 minutes. So this is the Inspiration Day. We also open the birth. I'm going to speed up because I only have 5 minutes, so stay with me. We also have a birthing center. In Pakistan, Muslim people don't give blood to Christian because they think they're wasting it. So my sister is a gynecologist, and she said, I will give my time for free. And she have a lot of doctors and nurses who give their time for free. They only needed a building. So with God's help, I asked a lot of congregation, and they helped me. So we only deliver babies in there. And we deliver their babies for free because Muslim people would not give blood to Christians. And also, a lot of time, Christians don't have money to go to hospital. And this is a beautiful story. I presented to a ladies' class one day, and one young lady wrote the whole check to build that birthing center. And I cried. I mean, I'm a crier anyway. Because I was like, wow. Wow. I mean, you know, God, you keep amazing me. Because I thought it would take me 10 years to raise that much money. One person in one night, I just presented the need, and this person said, don't worry, money will be in your, money will be on your table tomorrow. I said, well, thank you. I mean, I didn't have any word else to say, you know, because I just want to share with you, God amazes you. Oh, I'm pointing. Oh, there we go. That's the church building in Pakistan. For 60 years, we survive in a Muslim country. Every single day we have threat. I'm going to speak again, 20 minutes, so I'm going to cover some other things. 60 years, we survived because you know why? He said, I would never leave you or never forsake you. And we are living example that he will never leave you because he wants you. And when he wants you, nobody. What they can do to your body? Be afraid of the one who can destroy both body and soul. I'm running out of time, but I will be back.